When they're not climbing trees, they're making videos about trees. When they're not making videos about trees, they're competing in trees. When they're not doing that, they're fiddling with hardware. And when they're not fiddling with their hardware, they're milling wood. And when they're not milling wood, they're pulling wood out of their pants. By wood, I mean sawdust. And when they're not doing any of that, well, they're talking trees.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Talking Trees. This is going to be a very different podcast from the ones before it. This is going to be me sharing a story of what happened to me last year in 2017. It's also a reason why there was about a year and a half gap in between episode 5 and episode 6 of the Talking Trees podcast. And obviously all that will be explained by this story. And the biggest reason for doing this podcast is just to, I really want to raise awareness for Lyme's disease, or Lyme disease, sorry, which, to raise awareness for everybody who may be potentially suffering from Lyme, but especially people within the arboricultural industry, as you know, we work in an outdoor profession, so we're probably a lot more likely to be exposed to tick-borne diseases in certain parts of the world. So this is my story about how I went from being a very physically fit person, you know, no major stresses in my life, to being completely pretty much debilitated for at least a couple of months before I started getting back on my feet again. So I'll go back to the 23rd of March 2017, or maybe a couple of days prior. I remember going to work on a Friday. I was contracting for another tree company, and I was at work that day, and I felt like a bit of a burning sensation up and down my arms and my legs, and it seemed pretty strange, and definitely enough for me to pay attention to it. But as an arborist, many of you all know that you come home from work, you have like scrapes, scratches, rashes, aches and pains all over your body, and so it was just I just assumed it was just another one of those things that I'd go to bed on the Friday evening, wake up, and it would be gone, because more often than not, that's exactly what happens. So worked on the Friday, had friends around for dinner Friday night, you know, it was a nice evening, went to bed, woke up Saturday morning, and still had these funny kind of burning sensations, maybe a bit of a tingling sensation. So I'm one of those people that really hates going to the doctor, just because I don't want to waste my time, because I think, oh, it'll be fine. But it was obviously felt strange enough that I went to a walking clinic on the Saturday, just to see if they could think it might be anything specific. Went to the doctor, and they, you know, I was very vague in saying I've got a bit of burning sensation, and that was all I could tell them. And on the Saturday, all they could suggest is go home. If things get any worse, come back and see us again, and you know, we'll see if there's any more we can do, or see if you have any more symptoms. Sunday rolled around, you know, still feeling the same, but carried on. Monday, I think I went to work. Did I go to work on Monday?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, my wife Joanna is here to help me along with the podcast because she was a huge part of this whole this whole experience, and she was an amazing support to me, and so she's joined me on this podcast to maybe ask me some questions if there's certain things I forget to talk about, or to prompt me to talk about, you know, other things, and just generally to help me along, because as you can see, I would probably struggle to think of words and that kind of stuff. Anyway, did Monday, did I go to work?
I think I went to work on Monday. You didn't Tuesday, and then didn't you take yourself to VGH on Wednesday, and then they sent you home? And it was Thursday morning at 4 a.m. when everything really...
Yeah, okay, so I went to work Monday and Tuesday, still feeling, you know, the same, probably worse. And then on the Wednesday, I decided that I would go into a hospital, to the emergency, and just to get seen, because I knew that there was something really wasn't right at this point. So I saw a doctor. They did a couple of tests on me.
Did a CT scan and some blood work.
They didn't do a CT scan on that day. Okay. But yeah, they took some blood. Or maybe they did do a CT scan, and then he referred me on to a follow-up with for some neurology tests, I think.
Mm.
But anyway, sent me home, and they said somebody would follow up with me. But I didn't really get any more clarity on anything, to be honest. Then on the Thursday morning, I woke up at 4 a.m. with the most excruciating pain in the back of my neck. So much so that I literally couldn't stand, I couldn't sit still because the pain was too much. So I was pacing up and down the corridor in our apartment. I was just pacing up and down just because, I don't know, for some reason walking would make it a little more tolerable. But by, you know, 20 minutes of that, and I just went and woke Joe up and said, I've got to go to the hospital now. This is something seriously wrong, and I can't stand this pain anymore. I was just in so much agony. So I went to the hospital. Luckily, it was early enough that there was hardly anybody in there, so they saw me pretty quickly, gave me some pain relief to get, well, to calm down the pain in the back of my neck. Then, you know, I looked at my file again, listened to what symptoms I'd had, what I was telling them, and then they decided to start running some more tests. So I had an MRI scan, another CT scan. They did various reaction tests on me, reflex tests where they like bang just below your knee, and they were getting me to do different neurology tests where you, to see if my fingers were moving correctly, to see if my eyes could follow like points correctly. And if you know anything about neurology and this kind of thing, they're all tests that are used to see if certain signals aren't, you know, getting to the right places, or they're not, your brain's not sending the signals correctly and that kind of thing. So they took me, after a while, they moved me upstairs into the ward and said they wanted to keep me overnight. So they took me to the neurology ward. And at this time, I still was, you know, unaware of really what was going on. They weren't really giving me much information. They weren't really telling me too much altogether, were they? They just kept saying they wanted to do
an MRI scan with contrast, which they couldn't do that day. So they had to admit you.
Oh, yeah. So I had an MRI scan, but they wanted to do one with something that you put into your bloodstream via IV, which is called a contrast, so that things show up a lot better on the MRI scan. And obviously, because they knew they were looking for something specific. They knew that that would work to for things to show up better. So I was in hospital for a few more days, a couple more days, and while I was in hospital, I just went downhill rapidly. I went from going into the hospital, you know, pretty physically fit and able, and walking into the hospital, you know, doing things and thinking, what, you know, why are they doing all these tests? Obviously something's wrong, but I was, all these like neurology tests they were doing on me, like making me squeeze their fingers and walking tests, and like everything I was doing, it seemed silly at the time because I could do everything. There was nothing, you know, ringing any alarm bells. But once I was in hospital just for a few more days, I started losing some kind of control of my hands and my grip strength, and then slowly started to walk funny and try and compensate for the way I was walking. And I was losing I started to become numb in my feet, so I couldn't walk properly because my feet almost didn't know where the ground was. And so it was very, very strange and very, very scary. And then one evening in hospital, which is probably one of the scariest points of my life, was I started to get this real tingly sensation that had started in my feet. That's why my feet were going numb. And then slowly overnight, the tingling sensation rose up to my legs, then rose up to my torso, and then all the way up to my chest, and then over like the next 24 hours, it then rose up kind of to my arms. And I was terrified that the tingly feeling would continue rising up to my head, and then I because I had no idea what it was and what it was doing, I thought, you know, if it rises up to my head and to my brain, is that gonna, I just, all these kind of thoughts were just wreaking havoc with me while I was laid in the hospital in the evening, and had no idea what was going on. Anyway, finally I got to see the neurology doctor, the specialist, which is where he explained my results on my MRI scan, finding these lesions on my brain, and explained to me that it led them to believe that I had multiple sclerosis, because you get lesions on your brain from MS, and everything that all the physical symptoms, all the symptoms of not being able to do these tests that they'd done previously, and walking tests, the grip strength, and all the like those things that they could see that I'd had gotten worse while I was in hospital, that led them to believe that I had MS. So then they discharged me from hospital because they said, you know, there was no point in me being in hospital. I may as well go home. And even though they probably knew I was going to get worse, they
told you that the symptoms would get better. They did. They sort of promised that the tingling sensation would get better.
Yeah, they said that I would get worse, but then after 2 weeks I would start recovering again. I think that was like a time frame that they gave me, wasn't it?
Mm. And they did they did mention steroids in the hospital, didn't they? When you were in the hospital, he said, you can have the option, we can administer you some steroids right now, but I don't think it's necessary. Then you didn't want to take them at that point because you wanted to fight it naturally, obviously.
Yeah, you know, I think it was mainly the doctor who said, he said, oh, yeah, I don't, you know.
He said you're on the cusp.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it, really, or if you don't really want to take it, you know. And then when I had a follow-up appointment with with the doctor like a week later. She was...
It was 10 days later.
Ten days later, yeah.
And
she
got a lot worse.
She was very shocked that I hadn't been given the dose of like IV steroids. Because I'd got much, much worse. So I left hospital still being able to walk.
Barely.
And then it got to a point when I was at home, I couldn't get myself out of bed. I couldn't really walk, or I was like kind of, I had to have things to hold on to get around.
Yourself,
I couldn't feed myself because my hands weren't working properly. So then my wife Jo, she had to, luckily she worked for a great company. They let her take as much time as she needed off work, just to look after me and feed me and wash me, everything like that, because I literally couldn't do anything. So yeah, then I had the course of like three. I went to the hospital on three consecutive days and had course of IV steroids, which they were to reduce inflammation, and they said it was the inflammation that was causing the blockage of the signals from my brain on my spine. So that's why I had all these crazy symptoms. So they were hoping that reduce the inflammation for now, and you know, I would recover somewhat. Obviously they didn't know to what point, but that was the first course of action. So I got out of hospital, and then not long after being home, a friend of mine sent me a link to a podcast, which was a podcast hosted by a doctor called Dr. Rhonda Patrick, and she has a website or a podcast called Found My Fitness, I think it's called. And she, so I'd heard her on a podcast with Joe Rogan before, and so that already kind of gave her credibility to listen to. And she her guest was a doctor called Dr. Terry Walls, who had MS, but very, very severe case of MS. And it was like progressive MS, and she couldn't walk, she was in a tilt-reclined wheelchair, she couldn't really do anything. And she'd gone through years of you know, taking medication and trying to help herself, taking lots of supplements for the vitamins she thought she needed, and you know, stabilized her MS but didn't improve. And then she started doing research on diet and nutrition, and through the extensive research she did and the extensive dietary changes that she did, she then started to notice changes. And then slowly but surely, you know, she was out of her tilt reclining wheelchair, she was walking, then she was running, then she was cycling. Then, it, you know, it just progressed and progressed. And just after watching a 30-minute podcast with her, you know, it gave me a lot more hope than I previously had, because at the time I didn't know anything about MS. All the doctors told me that I can take medication, and I've always been one for hating the thought of taking medication. And the fact that when you research MS medication, is that the best it's going to be is 50% effective at reducing the amount of relapses you have. So it's not curing anything, it's just trying to prevent the amount of relapses, and it's about 30 to 50% effective. So I was like, I don't want to take this stuff because the amount of side effects it has, it just didn't seem to make sense to me. And so I thought, after listening to this podcast, I thought, if I can help myself through diet, through lifestyle changes, all these kind of things, I would much prefer to go down that route. So I started reading Terry Walls' book, which I'll show you here. It's called The Walls Protocol. It says, a radical new way to treat all chronic autoimmune conditions using paleo principles. So the walls protocol, it's a huge amount of it is about how to change your diet and how to get and how to maximize the amount of micro and macronutrients that your body needs, what your body needs for what functions, you know, what vitamins and minerals do certain parts within your body, how to eat to reduce inflammation, which is a huge part of autoimmune disease, a huge part of general health, really, because especially if you look at the Western diet, it's so inflammatory. So I started reading this book, and as I was reading it, started to implement the changes as I got through the book. The book also goes on to do another lifestyle changes, you know, how exercise helps you, because, you know, as well as keeping you fit and active and mobile, you're releasing endorphins in your brain, so it's good for brain health. Other things, like she talks about doing like colonic with coffee enema, which is a really great thing for detoxifying your liver. So basically your liver filters out toxins from what goes into your body, and you having a coffee enema is designed, or it's used for making your bile release to reduce to flush out toxins from your liver, and there's all these things that I read, like from her book, that, you know, I made so many changes in my life. So I went from thinking I had a pretty good healthy diet. I'd cut out what I felt was eating like refined sugars probably about 2 years prior to this diagnosis, but once I read the book, I realized that I still really didn't eat healthy in comparison to what I do now. So going through the Walls protocol, it basically, she recommends, or she tells you to, if you want to improve your health and try and heal your autoimmune diseases, is cut out dairy, cut out all grains. So like a huge one is wheat, because that's probably the biggest thing that wreaks havoc with people's body, because it's like, to use a metaphor, it's almost like pouring concrete into your gut. It's so bad for gut health, and gut health is so important for health of your body, but the link between your gut and your brain is very important, and it's a direct link. So things that affect your gut affect your brain and your clarity of thinking and those kind of things. So cut out all grains, cut out sugar, cut out using certain cooking oils, so like sunflower oil, canola oil, safflower oil, those kind of things. So go to using extra virgin olive oil for salads, and use avocado oil and coconut oil for cooking. Also, her diet is aimed at being as much anti-inflammatory as possible. So all the foods you're cutting out are the inflammatory foods, or that cause inflammatory responses. And pretty much most of the foods that she's saying to consume are all have anti-inflammatory properties, or, you know, high in antioxidants, all those kind of good things. And then on top of that is to try and include foods that help symptoms, like, so with MS, it's it's a condition that affects the brain. So I started sourcing lion's mane mushrooms, which are proven to have a lot of positive effects on the brain, and they even have proved it to help rebuild the myelin sheath, which is something that deteriorates with MS patients. So that was one thing that I was really keen on getting hold of, and managed to find it at a local farmer's market during the summer. And then I bought some supplements from the supplement store during the winter when the farmer's market wasn't on anymore. Then started, once I got my strength back, because through this whole process I lost a lot of weight, became stick thin, lost all my strength because I went through a good few months of not really being able to do anything. So I lost all my strength. So I started exercising again. Obviously that made me feel better. Was releasing endorphins in the brain. Just me being able to exercise again made me feel better, because there was times in hospital when I felt like I may never be able to exercise again. And yes, slowly but surely started feeling better and better and better. And gradually from my worst point, which was about 2 weeks after I came out of hospital, and then making dietary changes and making lifestyle changes. And, I was eating as much organic food as I possibly could, because that's another thing that is in the WALS protocol, about how important it is to eat organic food. Just because the amount of chemicals and toxins that go into your body through eating food that where pesticides are used, and where there's, different toxins in the ground, and everything is designed in the WALS protocol diet book to optimize like your health, so that your body can then fight off any diseases that it has. So I then started doing a lot of things to optimize my health. And one of the things I did was went to a naturopathic doctor. I had my blood taken for, it was like a heavy metals test. So they would take your blood and check if there were, what metals were being held within your body. And then they had chelation tablets that you could take to get rid of the heavy metals in your body, because having certain metals within your body, especially in high levels, can affect the way that your body works, different parts of your immune system, like different parts of your body, like your immune system, how it can operate, how various different bodily functions operate. So I went and had these heavy metal tests done, as well as some food intolerance tests, and just anything that I felt could help me optimize my nutrition, optimize my health. When I went back to get the results of the metals testing, I was there about 10 minutes early, and the doctor was running behind schedule by, 20 minutes or so. So I had a bit of time. I was in the waiting room, and on the bookshelf in the waiting room, there was some books on Lyme disease. And I'd heard one person mention Lyme disease prior to this, like while I was ill, but never looked into it anymore, kind of dismissed it. Or I didn't dismiss it, I just didn't. I felt the doctors know what they're talking about. They did all these tests, they're the experts. They're the ones that have given me a diagnosis. So, there's no point in me going and searching the internet high and low to find other things that could possibly be, when I've been through MRI scans, I've had all these blood tests and so on and so on. So anyway, because somebody had mentioned it, I just picked it up while I was in the waiting room. And that short period of time that I had in the waiting room got me, through the first 20-30 pages of the book, and instantly I was like, oh God, maybe I need to have some tests just to rule out Lyme disease, because Lyme disease, if you don't know about it, one, it's very, very serious if left in your body for, you know, a long period of time. Two, it can mimic lots of other diseases, and especially MS and other autoimmune disease, because the way it attacks your nervous system, it can wreak havoc with your brain and the way that your brain sends signals to different parts of your body. So you then your body is affected, and your muscles and everything is affected. So, and because they said that it can mimic MS, and that was like one of the main key points within the first few pages that I read, I spot when I went through to see the doctor, the naturopath, I brought this up to him after he'd gone through the my test results that I was there for, and he was actually quite an expert on Lyme disease. So we spoke about Lyme for another 45 minutes, and I came out of that appointment with the decision that I was going to spend the money on sending some blood work to a lab in the States called iGenesis, which is supposed to be the best place for Lyme testing, especially definitely in North America, if not the world. I know there's a place in Germany that's very good for Lyme testing, but apart from that, testing here in Canada, testing in the UK, testing anywhere else that I've heard of is pretty terrible, and the tests are like something like 40% accurate. They come up with false positives, false negatives, and it's all because of the type of testing they do, because there are a whole range of tests that you can do for Lyme, and you kind of need to do a whole panel of different tests to see if they collaborate with each other or corroborate each other's kind of tests. And anyway, I had this test done mainly just to rule out the whole Lyme disease issue, because I knew that if I didn't do the test and rule it out, then I'd always have it in the back of my mind thinking, is this potentially Lyme disease? And at the time, I didn't know anything about Lyme. And the tests were pretty expensive, but I just, you know, at this point, it was my health was more important than the cost of the test. So I went ahead and did it. Anyway, a couple of weeks later, I got the results back. I went in to see the doctor, and he said that the tests had come back positive for Lyme bacteria, which was obviously a big surprise for me, because I was pretty sure that it was going to come back negative, but I wanted to do the test anyway. So then I listened to the doctor for quite some time to kind of explain, you know, what happens with Lyme, how it gets into your body. You know, it kind of burrows its way down into your nervous system, especially because at that point I'd had it for, you know, at least 8 months. So if Lyme gets caught early, then it's quite simple to treat. You go on a course of antibiotics for about a month, and the bacteria hasn't had a chance to get deep into your body, and the antibiotics will wipe out the Lyme bacteria. If you've had it in your system for as long as I'd had it, it then becomes known as chronic Lyme, where the bacteria is a type of bacteria called a spirochete, which basically corkscrews its way into your nervous system, and it's very, very hard to kind of fight and extract, or what, you know, whatever you want to call it. And the antibiotics can't get to where the bacteria has gotten to in your body, so antibiotics don't work anymore once you've got chronic Lyme disease. So this was a lot to take in, but at the same time I was doing really well. My health had got back to being pretty good. Still had symptoms, or still to this day have symptoms of like tingling in my arms and legs, kind of slight burny feeling, that similar to that I got initially when I first noticed something was wrong. But other than that, my health was good because I'd made all these dietary changes, all these lifestyle changes. So, you know, I got information from the doctor. He recommended a couple of books that I should buy and read through. And they were specifically on treating Lyme through like a herbal protocol, because as I explained to him, I really didn't want to go on to Western medication. And he said at that point, there's no research that shows that any medication is effective at that point. So doing it through nutrition, diet, and a specific herbal protocol is the best course of action, really. So I bought the books, did a bit of research on what herbs and supplements to start taking, and started taking them. Joe, do you just want to go and grab some of the supplements I've got, and I'll kind of go through a few of the supplements. So at this point, I'm then starting to begin to think, well, is the MS diagnosis false? And because the Lyme mimics MS, and I asked the doctor the same question, and his response is basically he can't rule out the MS diagnosis, but he said if 95% of doctors saw the Lyme test results and heard about the MS diagnosis, they would say that it was a misdiagnosis. So I can't be certain, but that's kind of the way I'm leaning towards, that the MS was misdiagnosed and that I do have Lyme because of the test results I got back and because of the lab that I went to get the test results. The supplements I started taking to try and combat the Lyme, first one is called resveratrol, which is actually found in red wine, because it comes from the skin of red grapes. So I take 5 tablets twice a day of the resveratrol. I take andrographis. I take the same amount, so 5 tablets of those twice a day. I take something called banderol, which is in a little bottle with a pipette. So I take like 30 drops of that twice a day. Something called cemento. Take the same amount of that. And once I started looking into Lyme a bit more, someone sent me links about stevia actually being shown to help. But then the more research I did, they said that the only stevia that your body can actually process is one by this company called Nutra Medics, because it's in...
Is it because it's liquid
form? It's in something... it's in like ethanol, like 20%, and apparently because it's in that, it means your body can then digest and metabolize the stevia.
And you can only get that from the US.
I was unable to get the stevia in the liquid, the cemento and the banderol from the US. From a company called Nutramedics. Then I'm also, on top of that, I take something called Cell Protector every now and again, which is just full of all kinds of different vegetable extracts, broccoli sprout, cauliflower sprout, cabbage sprout, cress sprout, arugula sprout, daikon sprout, radish, blah blah blah, turmeric, milk thistle, watercress. It's got all that in the one tablet. Another one called NACAAL, NAC and AAL. That was recommended by the naturopathic doctor that I take some of that.
So the combination of those, if you mentioned the book, which is where you found the herbal supplement route.
Yeah, so the book that was recommended was this one called Healing Lyme by Stephen Booner. This is the most highly recommended book on healing Lyme disease. If you do any research on Lyme, it's the one that comes up the most. Everybody kind of talks about this book, and it's in his protocol to take the resveratrol, the andrographis, cat's claw, and there's a bunch of other stuff, I think, that he says you can, you know, add to your supplementation as well. But yeah, that's what I've been taking for like the last 9 months, I think, now. Yeah, and where should I go from here?
Well, I think it's important for you to tell specifically people that work in arboriculture, but also everybody else, just to be so aware to check your body for ticks, like especially within your industry. But then you can talk about your mum who's been walking in Yorkshire and she's been having to remove ticks. And then also, I think it's important to mention my mum, who recently was diagnosed with Lyme after visiting Scotland, and also to be really aware of that bullseye rash, which not every person who has Lyme will show, but just to be aware of the signs and maybe some of the symptoms. And yeah, just to make sure that people are doing, taking themselves to doctors and advocating for themselves. And
yes, going back to just specifically for arborists, but for anybody really who's out walking out in the garden, out walking in the country, especially in areas where there are a lot of deer, because deer seem to be the main one for carrying ticks, is just to check your body at the end of the day, at the end of a walk, when you get in the shower. And this is something that's I found is really hard as being an arborist, because when I get home, you know, first thing I do is jump in the shower, and most of the time you're covered in kind of little bits and pieces that you've got kind of down your t-shirt during the day, and then you've got loads of scratches, and you know, even just that's from a standard work day. And so you get home and you have like little marks on your arms, you have little rashes, you have little bits of leaf or twig or dirt, that, you know, could be anything. And so it's pretty awkward to be checking, but but now I've become more aware of it. I do check myself, and you know, as best I can, you know, check under your armpits, because you know, ticks can get anywhere. Ticks can latch onto your clothing and then, you know, get onto your skin. So it's really important to check for ticks. And it's crazy, because since I had this positive test for Lyme, the amount of people and amount of stories that I've heard of people knowing somebody with Lyme, or people finding ticks on themselves, it's pretty scary. And as Joe was just mentioning, I was speaking to my mum recently about it, and she lives in North Yorkshire in England, and you know, often taking the dog for a walk, and she said she's had ticks on her multiple times in the last few months. And the dog would get them all the time, so she has a special tick remover so that it makes sure she pulls them out without the tick releasing all its bacteria into your body if you pull it out incorrectly. So for anybody who's had ticks before or who lives in an area where there is a potential for ticks, make sure you get a tick remover. You get them from just your average pet store would probably have them, but they're designed in a way to kind of hook underneath the tick and twist it out without it leaving any bacteria in your body, which is obviously very important. And then on from that is Joe's mother just recently went on a vacation to Scotland about 5 or 6 weeks ago now. Got back, started feeling terrible, like really bad headaches, no energy, very lethargic, which was very uncharacteristic. So she kind of knew that something was wrong, and then found like the typical bullseye rash. So if you do any research online, you'll find that one of the early signs of being bitten by a tick is a thing called a bullseye rash, which is the most obvious sign that you've been bitten by a tick. So she found that, went to the doctor, and he identified it straight away as Lyme and then put her on a course of antibiotics. I don't want to get into her case too much because, you know, it's still not been resolved, whereas it kind of should have been by now, but they didn't give her a long enough course of antibiotics. I think they only gave her 2 weeks and she's still having quite bad symptoms and still not feeling back to her normal self anyway. So yeah, it's very, very scary. And if you do any research on Lyme, there's some terrible stories of what Lyme can do to people, the way it can affect your brain, the way that you think, how you can kind of hallucinate and how you can, anything to do with the brain is really, really scary. And Lyme has the potential to do a lot of damage. As well as to many of the parts of the body. So yeah, that's my story. And again, I really just want the whole thing to sink into people and people to realize that this is quite a serious problem in certain parts of the world anyway. Definitely the northeast United States, quite a lot of Europe, over here in Western Canada, and I'm sure northwestern, like the Pacific Northwest, the United States. I'm not sure quite how far the reach of the ticks go and how far Lyme disease reaches, but specifically those areas. And yeah, like I said before, because we're in this industry, we're kind of more exposed to it than most people. So checking yourself all the time, or getting your partner to kind of check you over when you're going for a shower at the end of the day. Because this is something that could, you know, it can ruin your life, even if it's ruining your life for a few months, like that happened to me before I kind of got back on my feet again. It meant I wasn't working for a couple of months. My wife had to take time off work and she had to help pretty much do everything for me. So it was a lot of strain on her, a lot of strain on our relationship. And it was just the worst time of my life, to be honest. And hopefully through everything that I'm doing, I'm on the path to, I hope full recovery. I would say that I'm probably 95% back to where I was before everything happened. You know, I lost a little bit of strength that I'm working on regaining. Still have some residual symptoms, but I'm hoping that through seeing some specialists, there's certain things that we can do to try and eradicate those symptoms and eradicate the Lyme once and for all. It's just about raising awareness. If you listen to this podcast and you work with a crew of people, just pass it on to them, especially if it's in an area where you know Lyme is prevalent. Just kind of talk about it with people and spread awareness. If this podcast can help anybody, then it's worthwhile. So thanks for listening and watching if you watched. Much appreciated, and I just want to wish you everybody good health, and hopefully they don't have to go through what I went through. Thanks for listening.